Now, the latest on the Cardinal Hickory Creek project, the controversial massive power line through southwestern Wisconsin. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Construction of the line from Dubuque to Madison is expected to begin later this fall, but the roughly $500 million project is the subject of multiple lawsuits that we will dig into. What questions do you have about building a high voltage transmission line? Do you think that the benefits of a massive power line project outweigh the negative environmental impacts, or vice versa? 800-642-1234. Danielle Kading is a WPR reporter based in Superior who's been covering the Cardinal Hickory Creek project. Danny, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Kate.
So before we dive into the lawsuit, set us up first with the scale of this project, the planned route, and where we're at.
Okay. Well, it's a $492 million transmission line. The Cardinal Hickory Creek transmission line is being built about 100. It's the total span of it would be about 100 miles from Dubuque County, Iowa, to Dane County here in Wisconsin. And it's already under construction in the Iowa portion of the project.
So it's under construction in the Iowa portion. We often talk about, you know, projects being shovel ready. Help us understand where it is in the timeline here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, sure. So right now in Wisconsin, I believe work is set to begin on an electric substation this fall. And that's expected to move forward unless there are any court orders to halt it.
And so, meanwhile, there are the lawsuits, several lawsuits against this project. What are these lawsuits about?
Yeah, so right now the line is the subject of three lawsuits that have been filed by the Environmental Law and Policy Center on behalf of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation and the Driftless Area Land Conservancy. And those groups are challenging approvals that were granted for the project by a number of agencies, including the Wisconsin Public Service Commission, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Rural Utilities Service, and the Army Corps of Engineers. And essentially, they're arguing that state and federal regulators made a mistake in their decision making. And they're arguing that it also that this transmission line just threatens the Driftless area of southwestern Wisconsin and the Upper Mississippi River National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay, so are the suits really about environmental disruption? You know, what did they get wrong? What is the crux of these suits?
Well, it's about a little bit of both. You know, one of the lawsuits has to deal with conflicts of interest on behalf of state regulators. The Wisconsin Public Service Commission approved this line a couple of years ago unanimously, but environmental and conservation groups are arguing that members of the Public Service Commission had conflicts of interest and should have recused themselves from that vote. They say that the Public Service Commission Chair, Rebecca Cameron Falk, and then Commissioner Mike Hipsch were biased on their votes. And the reason for that is they point to Commissioner Vock's work as an attorney for a law firm that represents We Energies. And the parent company of We Energies is WEC Energy Group, which owns about 60% of American Transmission Company. And American Transmission Company, ITC Midwest, and Dairyland Power Cooperative are all building this 345 kilovolt power line.
And just a quick disclosure, American Transmission Company, ATC, is a financial supporter of WPR. So as you look at these perceived conflicts of interest, you mention Cameron Vock, but then there's the then commissioner, Mike Hipsch. What were his perceived biases?
Yeah, so at the time, Mike Hipsch was serving as an advisory committee member for the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, which operates the regional electric grid. Mm-hmm. And that grid operator has come out in support of the project. They've identified it as one of, I think, 17 multi-value projects that they say would help promote renewable energy in the region. So these groups think that warrants a closer look. He's also been questioned over his votes because he was found to have applied for a job as the CEO of Dairyland Power within 6 months after leaving the commission. And so people are questioning whether or not he was, you know, impartial when he was looking at these decisions.
Didn't ultimately get the job, though, but still there is this perception that is being brought forth in the lawsuit. What is the judge saying here?
So a decision, it was a week or two ago, Dane County Judge Jacob Frost ruled that these environmental and conservation groups could investigate whether or not Hipsch did have a bias when he voted in favor of the project. And so they're going to be taking a look at that. I think they have until August now to provide evidence on that. And then there's going to be another hearing, I think, in September.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Danielle Kading, who is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter who's been covering the Cardinal Hickory Creek Transmission Line project and the lawsuits, the litigation. What questions do you have about this massive power line project? Do you live in southwestern Wisconsin? How do you feel about the Cardinal Hickory Creek project? Join in 800-642-1234. Danny, back way up for us. What are the organizations building the transmission line, ATC and ITC Midwest and Dairyland Power, what are they seeing as why this big project is needed now?
Sure. Well, they're saying that this project is pretty vital to get to sustainable energy in the region. They're saying that this project would do several things, including reduce congestion on the system. It would improve reliability and improve access to that change of resources. So, like, sure. Basically tying in more wind, solar into the grid. And so basically these projects are being built and they say they need a way to tie into the grid, and that transmission line is the way to do it. But there's some argument over whether or not, you know, these renewable resources that these utilities are citing are in fact renewable, or if the line would carry mostly renewable energy sources or fossil fuel sources like coal or natural gas.
Yeah, that has been a point of, you know, kind of blurriness as to what this transmission line will carry. And, you know, one of the arguments is that it will be fossil fuel sources like coal and natural gas. What is the role of renewable energy options like wind and solar with this transmission line?
What is the role of renewable energy options?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, the utilities are arguing that this line is very vital to getting those renewable energy sources onto the grid. They say that they've got about 7,900 megawatts of renewable fuel resources that are completely dependent on this line, and without it, that they wouldn't be able to tie into the grid. But, you know, the environmental and conservation groups are arguing that most of the sources of energy that would tie in would be fossil fuel sources like coal and natural gas. And I think, you know, there's some debate here too over what's considered renewable, mm-hmm. because, you know, 10 years ago, I think everybody was pushing to move towards natural gas and get away from coal as a more environmentally friendly option. But now, fast forward, and we're looking at natural gas as, well, I guess the opinion has changed on that, at least among environmental groups. And they're opposing such projects now because natural gas, although it emits about half the carbon emission as coal, it's still a fossil fuel emitter. Mm-hmm. And so they're saying that we need to focus more on renewable energy projects like wind and solar and build them closer to home and smaller rather than focusing on such a big transmission line.
Let's bring in Frank now in La Crosse. Hi, Frank. What are your insights?
Hi, I'm glad you're addressing this question considering the role that you accept money from the corporate player, and I'm glad you identified that. I've got two points. One, I'd like to know what Governor Evers, up for the election, is going to do to slow down or stop this. And secondly, the reason why we shouldn't be supporting these power lines is that the ratepayers are being asked to pay for this, not stockholders. And it's never been proven that we're using any of the power from these lines. So we shouldn't be bearing the risk and the cost for something that we're never going to use. It should be the company's corporate stockholders.
Frank, thank you. So two-parter there. Has the governor taken a position on this?
As far as I'm aware, I haven't heard anything about his position on this particular transmission line. But if you look at the governor and his priorities, you know, he's made climate change a pretty central focus during his administration. You know, he launched a climate change task force that has looked at a myriad of issues impacting climate change across the state. And I think that they're making, environmental and conservation groups are making the case that, you know, this project in particular, it didn't look at all the impacts of what might happen, at least in the terms of greenhouse gas emissions or climate impacts that would stem from the electricity that could be generated by fossil fuels like coal and natural gas. On the question related to
the cost
amount,
to ratepayers,
Yeah, so Wisconsin ratepayers would pay around $67 million of the total project costs, according to the utilities. But environmental and conservation groups are saying that really that figure is closer to $2 billion over time. So there's a bit of a discrepancy there over what the project will cost and what the benefits would be. Utilities are saying this project would create somewhere between $23 million and $350 million in economic benefits over its 40-year lifespan. And I think some people have pointed to that range and questioned, why is there such a significant gap here in what we can expect to see? So, yeah, those are some of the things that people have wondered about related to the cost and also the climate change part of it.
WPR reporter Danny Kading has been covering the developments on the Cardinal Hickory Creek Power Line project as the Wisconsin PSC says construction on the transmission line is slated to start later this year. Do you live in southwestern Wisconsin? How do you feel about the project? What are your thoughts on the approval process for such large-scale utility projects? Still time, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Danny Kading on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing the status of the Cardinal Hickory Creek Transmission Line project that is the subject of multiple lawsuits. The Public Service Commission approved the project 3-0 and says construction will start later this fall. Danielle Kading is following developments. She's a WPR reporter and with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Mark now, joining us from Dodgeville. Mark, hi. You want to add some on the renewable power aspect?
Yes, thanks for taking the call. There are some hard figures from the Energy Information Administration, government agency, simple website people can look up, EIA.gov, and it says how much energy is produced from each source in each state. If we look at the states west of us that are producing more, it's not just Iowa, but some other states also, and wanting to ship the energy eastward, it's about 50% coal, almost no solar, and about 20% wind. So that's kind of a starting point. The second part of it is that small generation facilities tend to have the energy used locally. So when the wind farms are mostly in western Iowa and Nebraska and beyond, most of that's going to get used locally. It doesn't get on large transmission lines. From large plants like Nuke or many of the coal plants, they produce a lot more than can be used in those areas, so most of it goes on on a large transmission line. So I think it's fair to say we have 20% or less wind and 50% or more of coal.
Mark, thank you for adding that. And Danny, do you have anything more to say there on that mix?
Yeah, you mentioned the U.S. Energy Information Administration, and they did find that the state's coal-fired plants provided 42% of Wisconsin's electricity a couple of years ago. And since that time, we've seen changes in Wisconsin's energy mix with a number of utilities announcing the retirements of coal plants like the Columbia Energy Center and the Sheboygan coal plant, the Edgewater coal plant in Sheboygan, and also the South Oak Creek coal plant in southeastern Wisconsin. So we are starting to see this transition away from coal, but certainly he's right in that we have a very small amount of renewable energy right now that comes from wind and solar. I believe Renew Wisconsin has said that the amount of energy that we are building right now for wind and solar would amount to something like 6 or 7% of our total energy mix. And so we have a long way to go to bridge that gap. And I also just wanted to go back to a point from the previous caller related to climate change, because he had mentioned Governor Evers and his position on this. And, you know, Governor Evers has asked utilities to produce 100% carbon-free electricity by 2050. I think the question is whether or not that would also apply to any fuel sources that would be transmitted through these power lines. Mm. You know, utilities across the state are making pledges to meet that carbon-free or carbon-neutral future, but it's a little uncertain whether or not Governor Evers' executive order on that would also apply to any energy that's produced outside the state.
Let's look more closely here at land acquisition, Danny. The utilities have the right to take private property through eminent domain. What are the ramifications here for landowners in the area?
Well, for the people who are impacted by the project, they're significant. You know, the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation and Driftless Area Land Conservancy have said that taking private land for this project will mar the landscape, impair the tourism and economic vitality in the Driftless area, and also affect family farms and land and communities throughout southwest Wisconsin. Right now, the utilities say that they are still working with landowners on acquiring land for the project. But, you know, anyone who has to live next to these power lines, they're huge, right? Mm-hmm. They're almost 20 stories tall. And so I think people who are used to the natural and scenic beauty of the Driftless area, which was untouched by the retreating glaciers, I think, you know, they have a lot of love for this area. There are significant endangered and threatened species that live in this area and within the Upper Mississippi River Wildlife Refuge that could be potentially impacted by this project, including the whooping crane and, you know, other significant species and wetlands that would be disturbed through the building of this transmission line. So people's concerns are pretty significant regarding its impacts.
And certainly family farms in the area that have been in families for generations. What is the significance of 40 years for this transmission line? I'm trying to understand the time span here.
As the 40 years, so like the benefits that would be provided over that lifespan, and also some of the amount of money that ratepayers would pay over that time, I think that's what that refers to.
We're talking with Danielle Kading, who is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Superior, who's been covering the Cardinal Hickory Creek Power Line Project, getting your insights along the way at 800-642-1234. So, Danny, looking ahead here, what are you watching for in the developments on Cardinal Hickory Creek?
Well, obviously, you know, there's going to be that decision upcoming in state court where Dane County Judge Jacob Frost will rule whether or not Commissioner Hipsch was in fact biased when he voted in favor of the project. You know, the burden is on the environmental and conservation groups to prove that he wasn't impartial when he made that decision. And so they have until August to collect that evidence, and then there will be a hearing again in September. And then also where things stand with these federal lawsuits and the review of the project. You know, they're claiming that the Rural Utility Service approved an environmental impact statement for the line without complying with the requirements of federal environmental law. And so we'll see what the courts have to say about that.
Is there any indication that any of this litigation could stop construction on the transmission line?
At this point, I don't think so. My understanding is that these conservation and environmental groups haven't asked for an injunction or a stay on construction, but they've said that, you know, it just makes common sense to review the merits of the case first before any work would begin.
We heard from Lyric from Blanchardville, who called in to say that she's worried about how the power grid being connected and worries about the system being hacked and a huge transmission line going through the area and just the safety of it. Can you address at all any safety concerns?
Related to the cybersecurity aspect of it?
Yeah, cybersecurity and also any other types of you know, concerns about what it could mean to the area.
Well, I mean, I basically could talk to the environmental impacts of it. I'm not as familiar with some of the safety impacts of it.
Sure.
As part of the cybersecurity aspects, you know, I think this is something that the Biden administration and government agencies are taking a lot of note of after what happened to the Colonial Pipeline and JBS after they were hacked in recent weeks. I think there was news that came out yesterday that they recovered the ransom related to some of those issues. And so, you know, I think a lot of organizations are taking a look at whether or not they're secure from any outside threats.
Danny, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Danielle Kading is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Superior. She's been covering the Cardinal Hickory Creek power line project. Stay with us. We talk with a financial expert known as the Money Coach about how to approach our debt, our savings, and more as the world begins to recover from the pandemic. Bring on your personal finance issues, your questions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.